is not our son. Well, she's our daughter-in-law.
She's our future daughter-in-law.
You're confused. All right, so it happens every year. I don't know why, but here they come again, the Rammies. On June 24th, I know why.
It happens every year.
The Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington hosts the 2014 Rammies, when the area's best chefs, restaurants, watering holes, and more are feted and applauded. Not feted like F-E-T-I-D, but F-E-T-E-D. Yeah, thank you. We're delighted to have two Rammy nominees for Best Pastry Chef, Santosh Tiptur from Coco Sala and Tom Wellings from Fiola. And we're going to hear about the art and science of pastry chefing, and they also brought in some sweet taste. Between the pie and this stuff.
I know. There goes your diet.
Mommy. All right.
Okay. But there's a little bit more on the show today, as there always is. Trummers on Main. We have their year-and-a-half-old sommelier, Diana Moderick.
Well, she's not a year-and-a-half-old. She's been there a year
and a half. You know, she's been there a year and a half.
If she was a year-and-a-half-old, she couldn't be a som.
Well, Frank Kroll did it.
What do you want to drink?
Okay. Anyway, she's in studio to talk about all the fantastic goings on there. They've got some sort of bone marrow luge or something like that, and there's a pop-up upstairs. Anyway, there's a whole bunch happening out there at Trummers on Main, and we are going to get the 411 on it.
And lastly, but not leastly, Nikolai Koenig has maybe one of the best jobs in the entire world, maybe the planet. He's with Clément USA. He's in today talking about, he's an agricole expert, and he's got three brands of rum?
Rum agricole, yeah.
Rum agricole.
Style that they,
what does that mean?
We gonna be
Come on, let's
that.
Hear it. Tell us what
the,
that is.
The short explanation is it's rum that's made straight from the fresh juice of the sugar cane. So whereas 99% of the world's rum is made out of molasses, which is a byproduct of sugar production, industrial sugar production typically, agricole rum is a style made, adapted from brandy making, where they take the freshest juice possible, ferment it, and then distill it right into the rum. So a true expression of the cane.
You can answer this question. Does the sugar cane scream as it's cut down?
A little bit.
It does.
That's a stupid question.
Yeah. Like, I mean, does a lobster yell when you stick its head in the hot water?
It does. It screams.
You know, those little rubber bands work as gags.
Gagging the sugar cane.
Well, tell us about the process. I mean, why do it this way, and what's the difference between the other one as far as the taste?
There's a long version and a short version.
Well, you only got a couple minutes, man.
The medium
short. The sugar market was dominated by the island of Martinique throughout the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And up until the 1880s, when they lost their market completely and the island plummeted into an economic depression because no one would buy their sugar anymore. People were getting it from much cheaper out of places like South America, where there's a lot more land than a Caribbean island has to grow cane. So a physician by the name of Omer Clément, who was a big brandy drinker, took inspiration from Armagnac in the mainland of France, went over there and looked into their processes and adapted it to the island of Martinique, brought back a still from there, a copper column still, and he used those methods, which basically anytime you make brandy, you're making wine first, so you have something to distill into the brandy and you want the freshest grapes. And he took sugarcane from being a commodity crop to being a fruit crop, so that you take the freshest juice right out of the cane, you ferment it into a sugarcane wine or vin de canne in French, and then you distill that into the rum. So it's rum agricole, meaning directly from the field as opposed to from the factory.
How long does that process take?
It takes a few days because they're crushing the juice immediately as they're harvesting. Usually within an hour, the crush takes place. Fermentation happens over a few days. You have about 4 or 5% alcohol in the sugarcane wine after just a few days, and then you distill it right away. And then, of course, there's barrel aging, and you know there's a lot of aging involved. That takes years. But the white rum comes off the still within days.
Well, let's talk about the different kinds of products that you can do with that. I mean, there are different kinds of rums out there, but this one, and you don't spell the rum the same way. It's R-H-U-S.
Well, that's just a French spelling.
It's just a French spelling.
Yeah,
so it's just for looks.
It's just sexy.
Make it sexy.
It's sexier.
It's
sexier.
It's linguistic.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, because when you're drinking a lot of it and you can barely see, you call it rahum. I'll have another glass of rahum.
Okay, so what you make?
So what I made for you guys to start off with is a tea punch. Now, this is not tea as in English tea. This is tea as in short for petit. Which is French, of course.
For small.
So for small, yeah. Mm-hmm. So in Creole, in Martinique, they just say tea ponche.
Okay.
And I used 50% white rum, meaning 100 proof, This is from a distillery.
For those on at the end of the show, good luck. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, this is not the only fifth.
Everybody, look at, you know, the minute they heard that, they started dialing Uber.
So what I did was a tea punch is the traditional way of tea punch is chacun prépare sa propre mort, which in French or in English, I mean, just translates to each prepares their own death, because it's rude to consider that or to assume that people want the tea punch the way you like it. So if we were in my home, I would just put the limes cut out, cut up, and the rum and the sugar or cane syrup, which I brought with me today. Mm-hmm. And then as the guests arrive, they make it for themselves. We're trying to bring it to America, make it a bit of a longer drink. I use Rum JM because this is a very distinct and very unique property in the north of the island. They use water. It's on the, first of all, it's on the hillside of a volcano, mm-hmm. which is cool. And then that's where all the cane is grown.
Unless
and then
the volcano is exploding, and then
well, that
it's not
would
that, cool.
that would hinder production slightly. But in short, one of the cool things there is they use only the cane they grow right there on the side of the volcano, and they cut it down to whatever proof they're bottling, whether it's 50% here or 40% for an 80-proof white rum. They use water straight out of a mountain stream that comes off the volcano, so it's volcanic rock filtered water. Totally unfiltered. So this is really straight out of the earth of Martinique.
Cool.
The tea punch. But I've got four more drinks coming up throughout.
All right. Well, we are going to get to them later.
Sipping,
yes.
Let's talk to our good friend Joe Palma. So
hi, Joe.
You're back in D.C. You're in Charleston, which ain't shabby.
No, sir.
And
well, let's talk about your travels. I mean, you were at West End Bistro,
yep.
and then you left D.C. to hit the town in Charleston. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was always obviously went to school in Charleston. As you said, it is not shabby by any stretch of the imagination down there on the ocean. Yeah, I had the opportunity to go back and work at a restaurant called High Cotton. The guys that I'd worked for in college, same restaurant group. Mm-hmm. Had a great 2 years there. Definitely sort of got more up to speed with, you know, the industry down there and how much that's changed over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, and all the guys doing really great food, and saw the position had come available at Bourbon Steak, and gave my good friend David Varley a call and said, hey, what's going on with that? And he put me in touch with some people and did a tasting, and about a week later told my wife we're headed back up to D.C., and she was thrilled about it. So,
is she the one back there with a gun in her mouth?
She is. She's that one.
No, that's a drink. That's not a gun.
Furiously sipping rum. God bless her.
Well, so why Bourbon Steak? I mean, why was that appealing to you?
A bunch of different reasons. Obviously, to have the, you know, sort of legacy or standing in the city that restaurant has had, just, you know, after 5 years at this point, the remarkable consistency of the restaurant, I thought was really interesting. Me and a group and the Four Seasons seem to have just a tremendous partnership in terms of how much on the same page mm-hmm. they each are. And that was definitely...
He's saying all the right things, I
well,
think. Yes.
He's been well trained.
there you go. I don't want to incur her wrath. Yeah, and it was just, you know, as you sort of expand your career, you go from, you know, sort of line cooking, try to expose yourself to more and different aspects of the business.
All right, so you come into a restaurant that's becoming iconic in this city. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great hangout, got great bar scene, terrific restaurant, menu that never fails to please. So how do you put your own stamp on something like that?
Well, but can I also say, I mean, what's interesting about Bourbon Steak is the kind of influences that have been there. I mean, aside from Michael Mina, who is the umbrella mm-hmm. of the restaurant, I mean, you had David Varley, you know, Adam Sobel. I mean, you had two very strong forces. I mean, John Critchley was only there a short time, but you had some very strong forces. Adam and DV went at it very differently. Mm-hmm. So how do you come in now? I mean, you have a very well-functioning restaurant.
Absolutely.
And make it yours. How do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of told people this is not a bad problem to have. Kind of after following two rebuilding projects, it's nice to walk in and be like, all right, this is just going extremely well.
I'll just phone it in.
Yeah, I'll be over here.
Just kind of sit
if anyone
here.
Needs anything, I'll, you know,
call me if you need me.
More salt here, this, that, and the other. And yeah, I think one of the great things is certainly been impressed to me is that was David's restaurant to make his own and Adam's restaurant to make his own. And mm-hmm. I think that's definitely been extended to me. And, you know, just figure out what works. We're not doing anything with the steaks because bourbon steak. It's been
you don't want to make any mistakes.
Oh,
thank
who
you.
Who laughed?
Thank
no
you.
Laughing at that one.
Teeny
like,
so. Has to laugh. That's part of the deal.
But one of the things that we're looking at is You know, obviously we do a ton of steak. And one of the things we'd like to do is, you know, sort of revamp the dessert program to have a lot of lighter, more citrusy things to finish up with. Mm-hmm. We're relooking at some of, you know, the fish entrees, certainly adding a few more crudos and ceviches to the starters, just so that, you know, we can be able to provide people, if they want, a three-course experience without leaving, you know.
Do you stay with the same resources? Heavy. Do you shake any of that up?
I mean, there's a few producers that I've worked with in the past that will bring in some that are already established there, and we're just going to kind of expand their role a little bit. Looking forward to seeing all the dry-aged meat products that are coming out of Virginia. There's a ton of them, and continue to feature those. You know, and sort of the last 2 weeks has been really interesting to consider the idea of sort of theater, because I think bourbon steaks, you know, can be an everyday restaurant, but obviously a lot of people choose to celebrate anniversaries and birthdays with us. The things that we can do tableside, maybe expand that. We've got a dessert trolley that's going to come online in probably a month or two, and just have some fun things for people there, you know, expand shellfish towers and sort of really get into you know, the theater dining, and continue to expand that experience.
Yeah, that shellfish tower thing is becoming a thing now, isn't it?
It is. You send one out in the dining room, and three other tables want it.
Right.
You know?
I always think some restaurants just parade it around.
Yeah. And 100 miles away, shellfish swim in circles.
Nobody ordered this. We're just going to
walk. Holy crap, they ordered another one.
Exactly.
There goes Louie.
What about the garden? Are you going to take that over?
Yeah, absolutely. It had sort of lain fallow for like 2 or 3 months. It's sort of situated on top of the hotel's pool, and mm-hmm. they thought they were going to have to do some renovations. So they didn't do a lot of spring planting. That got pushed off, so we bought a lot of nice potted plants from Path Valley, I think we're all familiar with. And exec Sue, Vic, and a couple of the cooks and myself went out there and just dug everything up and laid some irrigation lines and laid, you know, some brand new plants. And we'll certainly see those coming online, mm-hmm. you know, in a month or two. And the herbs that were there continue to be there. And we're, you know, we're pulling lemon balm for a new strawberry gazpacho that we're doing. Pulling some fresh lavender for a foie gras dish and things like that.
Cool.
Okay, good. So you're playing in the kitchen. You're having fun.
Absolutely.
And is there, we're going to have to take a break. Yep. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll ask just a couple last few minute questions. Okay, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are coherent at the moment, but won't be for long. We'll be back in just a
moment. We're coherent.
Discover what it takes to become a pilot at the National Air and Space Museum's Stephen F. Udvar-Hassy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. Join them for the 10th annual Become a Pilot Family Day and Aviation Display. See dozens of visiting aircraft on display for one day only. Enjoy hands-on activities, story times, and kite flying demonstrations. Saturday, June 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton. WTOP is a proud media sponsor. Visit airandspace.si.edu. for details.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Volunteers are the backbone of many nonprofits, and Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington is no exception. I'm Renthia Ross, a volunteer and board member of the Fairfax County Boys and Girls Clubs. For the care and support of Boys and Girls Clubs in Savannah, where I grew up, I realized my dreams to go to college, law school, and become a lawyer. I'm a corporate executive with GEICO Insurance Company. My success was made possible with the support of my family and caring adults from the Boys and Girls Clubs. I urge you to give to the Boys and Girls Clubs so kids can grow up great. Go to bgcgw.org to donate now.
Hi, I'm Avina. I'm 7 years old and I'm blind. You can help me live the life I want.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Just call 855-659-9314 or visit carshelpingtheblind.org. That's carshelpingtheblind.org. And if you know a blind person who needs help, email nfb@nfb.org.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking, there goes the rum, we're talking to Joe Palma, who is newly returned to D.C. as the executive chef at Bourbon Steak in the Four Seasons, and I guess the question is, because you, how long have you been back?
On and off for about 2.5 weeks now.
Yeah, so, When it's time for you to do your first full menu, mm-hmm. will that be fall or will that be sooner than that, where you're really crafting it?
We've got some things that are coming online Monday, actually. We've got three dishes that we're switching around. After that, we're probably going to I'm going out to San Francisco for a week, and then we'll have
some. Do you need someone to come carry your bags? No?
I don't think we'd be good together. No, I don't have the band money.
I don't know. I'm fine.
I don't doubt that. Yeah, and then I'll get back from that in about a week. Mid June, and then we're just going to sort of really settle in, hit it nice and hard, and then maybe make some adjustments.
Any surprises? Anything where people go, this is bourbon steak?
Obviously, all the classics are going to be there. I'd like them to come in and say, hey, this is a little bit lighter than perhaps what's been there in the past. I want to take and definitely make sure that flavor comes first and everything's on the plate for a reason, then you make it pretty from there. It's not mm-hmm. necessary. Let's start pretty and figure out how to get some flavor in there. That's kind of obnoxious.
One last question, because I have, for the last couple of weeks, I've gone more and more vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm eating meat, but only at night and not that much. So
he's
the
not
question
going
is,
vegan. Let me explain.
I'm eating do, nothing Nikki. But he's vegetables during the day.
He's eating vegan during the day. Okay. It's Mark Bittman's VB6.
Right. I'm saying I
vegan
eat some
during the
meat
day,
at
but
night.
He's eating meat at night.
Right. Mm-hmm. But my
not
question
vegan.
Is if, oh my God.
I'm just saying.
Oh my God.
On your own show, David.
It's such pain.
On your own show,
such
sir.
Such pain. It's like a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. So,
well, maybe I should just muddle it with one of these things.
You know what? You're muddling my question, that's for sure. The question is, if people walk in and they are vegetarians, mm-hmm. they're vegan, you know, what do they get? Because in some places, it's just kind of, they just sort of put something together. Do you have a battle plan for that?
Sure. I mean, for example, the strawberry gazpacho that'll be on Monday, it has a buttermilk sorbet with it. We can leave that off. That's completely vegan vegetarian to start. A lot of nice fresh vegetables there. Definitely as we proceed sort of along that lighter path, obviously vegetables are definitely, you know, sort of what everybody's talking about. And
kind of main plate now.
Yeah, and enjoying a resurgence. So to the extent that we can definitely feature that, I'd love to have a vegetarian and vegan offering on the menu.
I mean, I do want to say for the record, though, it is the restaurant is called Bourbon Steak.
Right.
I mean,
know.
Well, a portobello mushroom can be.
I know. I'm just saying for the record.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I feel like the vegan vegetarian options will perhaps never supplant the steak options.
Right.
But I definitely think that we can, you know, do a better job of meeting that demand.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's going to be change its name to Bourbon Veggie.
No, sir. Not while I'm
there. All right.
Joe, thanks so much for
Absolutely.
Coming in.
Thank
Welcome
you.
Back. It's good to have you back in
Pleasure
D.C.
To be here.
So, Nikolai, let me ask you a question.
Anything.
As it is with growing, you know, grapes and all of that, is there a terroir issue with sugarcane? And is
there is in the case of Rum Agricole from Martinique and Guadeloupe, yes, because for one thing, Martinique has an AOC because it is a full-fledged state of France overseas, much like Hawaii is an overseas state of the U.S. Martinique was able to successfully win their application for Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, or AOC for short, basically, which means it's a protected name of origin. So you can't say Rum Agricole from Martinique without following very strict guidelines, just like you can't say champagne on your label without following the AOC guidelines for champagne.
Gotcha.
Or what have you. So that's just the easy comparison. Martinique only allows 12 varietals of sugarcane out of the many hundreds that are out there. There are only 12 allowed to be grown on the island of Martinique. And so the volcanic soil, of course, very important. And terroir comes too because, again, we're not processing or manipulating the fresh cane juice. We're just adding some yeast to help along the fermentation, and then we're distilling it. So you're getting all the flavor of the cane and the earthy minerality of the volcanic soil. All of that comes into play, and you'll see differences year to year, like you would growing grapes with the vintage of
wine. Do they manipulate the soil at all? Or
What they do is they
That was a good question, I thought.
It was Thank a very good question.
The soil, what they do is they rotate with banana
He gets
trees.
One a show, that's yeah. it.
Let Nikolai talk. You're just too job. Chatty today. Yes, my
well,
friend.
Well, that's the rum, you know. The
Speak.
That's
Speak
what happens
me.
When you start
But I mean, is there a guy that goes out there and says, oh, we need more ash? You know,
it's not quite like that, and that would be a whole other show if we wanted to get into the specifics of farming sugarcane. But they do rotate every few years. They rotate the cane fields with banana trees for the health of the soil. That's the principle. That's the biggest undertaking they do. But just like anything, soil rotation or crop rotation, rather, is important for the soil's health. The next product I'm about to showcase is new in the States. It's only leaving Martinique to come to America. It doesn't even go to mainland France. It's called Cane Bleu, or Cane Bleu, because it's a single varietal white rum. It's made only from blue sugarcane, and very terroir driven in this case, because blue sugarcane does not like to be wet. It doesn't grow in just any marshy field. It needs to be on a hillside with good drainage. So good soil, good drainage, sloping hillside to keep the soil from staying wet. And then it's a very thin, reedy stalk, so it's hard to get a lot of juice. But it's also the very most aromatic of the varietals of sugarcane. So,
are you pouring it straight, or are we making it straight?
You're welcome to try.
This is the upper deck daiquiri.
I'm going to make an upper deck daiquiri. Awesome. I call it that because it's both a very high quality and unique product, and also because it's 50% alcohol. So,
the ball lands
samples
in the upper deck.
I'm moving to the sample sizes now. Yeah,
awesome.
So, you're going to hear me shaking up the classic shaken daiquiri. It's just lime, sugar, and rum Clément Cane
Bleu.
You
will not shake us up at all. All right. Just rock and roll. All right. So let's talk pie.
Absolutely.
Teeny Lamothe is here.
Pie goes with rum, right?
Yes. Teeny, I have it every morning.
Teeny wrote a cookbook called Teeny's Tour of Pie, a cookbook for mastering the art of pie in 67 recipes.
I did. I wrote the whole book.
Look at you.
I did it. I wrote the whole thing.
Why, first of all, why pie and why do they call you teeny? You're not that teeny. You're
I am regular sized. I grew into a normal person. You know, I was born 2.5 months early, and I have been teeny ever since.
I
it's
see.
Just something that happened.
And Nikki was born regular time, and she's been teeny all her life. So that's just how it works. Thank you.
But I have a big personality.
Yeah, and never mind. So why pie?
You know, I grew up making pie with my mom. It was something that was just always around in our household. And you were speaking about gardens earlier. We had a garden in our backyard. We grew most of our own ingredients. And pie was something that I asked for every birthday. Mm-hmm. It was rather than cake. It was
where
I
is
want
this?
My
Where'd
birthday
you grow up?
Pie. Colorado. Mm. Yep, Littleton, Colorado.
Rocky Mountain High. That's it. Mm.
And so I think I moved away to college. I went to college in upstate New York, and I was sort of astounded that other people didn't have.
Oh, is that where you met Sam and Alyssa?
I got it. Your right. son, Sam. and I think I was surprised that nobody had garden. Like, not everyone had a garden growing up, and not everyone knew how to make pie. It was sort of something that.
The way you made your book.
Mm-hmm.
Was to find all these women pie makers around the country. Where did that idea come from, and how did you do your research to find these women? Because I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, well, you know, I started what I call the tour of pie because I thought that pastry school wasn't going to be specific enough to meet my needs. So I wanted to be a pie baker, and I wanted to know what it was to be a woman in the business. So I wanted to meet these people who would later hopefully become these mentors.
Mm-hmm.
So I started Googling the best pie places in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of built my list from there.
And how many women pie makers did you find total?
I found nine. There are nine in the book.
And you spent a month with each of them?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so how did you... Did you just, like, sleep in their bakeries? I mean, how did you put that together?
Sometimes it felt like it.
Well, she fits anywhere. She's teeny.
You know, I sort of based the trip around whether or not I had friends in the area.
Okay.
So I stayed with a lot of friends. I stayed with a lot of friends' parents.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was so generous with their time and their space. And, you know, I went to these bakeries, and these women were amazing and so encouraging. And so open to the idea of this new way of getting a pie education.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about
get me a pie.
Yeah, David's going to cut
do.
In. So you were making pies all your life, but when you went to, let's say, the first person to making pie, was there something she said that you were like, oh my God, I had no idea?
Well, you know, it's funny because baking at home is entirely different than baking professionally.
Of course.
It's you know, there's very
Scaling
little
up.
Baking that actually happens.
Right.
You know, it's all the steps to getting toward baking.
Mm-hmm.
What I love most about the first place was at High Five Pie in Seattle.
Right.
What I loved the most was that right off the bat, I was treated as a baker. There was no question. It was sort of just like, okay, great, you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. We'll teach you how we do it here. And that seemed to be the case the whole time. It was really wonderful.
All right, well, can we get serious about something? You've got you say 10 recipes in your book for no-fail crust, because right. to me, the crust is the key.
Yes.
The stuff on the inside's great, yeah. and obviously there's That's a the technique for that, but crust can be like eating wet mud,
yep.
or it can mm-hmm. be too hard.
Cardboard.
Or it can be what this is, which I just tasted. Where'd that go?
Give me that.
Hey, can I just say something? Get your own shells.
Cutting your own piece of pie. That's so greedy.
Sangi is banished from the studio. Oh, all right, here we go. No, Judd can stay.
Well, let's talk about the crust.
Yeah.
You even have a gluten-free
I do.
Crust.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel all that work? Like, what's your favorite crust? And, like, you describe why you use certain crusts with others.
Absolutely. My favorite is the whole wheat crust, which mm-hmm. is what I have today. And the reason I like it is because whole wheat has an inherently nutty flavor that mm-hmm. I think pairs really well with a lot of the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes for a softer crust. So it's going to be flakier. It's going to be softer. It's not going to get hard over time.
Okay.
And so I use a couple of things to make the whole wheat work. I use shortening and butter because you mm-hmm. want it to taste like butter, but the shortening is going to help with the flakiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I use vodka in the crust.
I was just going to ask mm-hmm. about vodka. Tiffany McIsaac uses vodka
yeah.
in her crust, too. And when I learned that...
No, I thought you just used vodka.
It helps with the rolling out mm-hmm. process.
But that's what I use now on all my crusts because yeah. it's better than water.
Yeah, it evaporates faster, so it makes for flakiness.
I like to use it pre-crust myself.
Yeah, exactly. Don't we all?
So what is your favorite pie?
My favorite pie is sour cherry.
Sour cherry,
yeah,
why?
Yeah, we're coming up on the season. I think, for me, a lot of pie gets too sweet too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the sour cherry is just like, it packs a really nice punch. And with the crust, it's just, it's sort of enveloped in this warm, buttery flavor.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, nothing beats blueberry.
Now, yeah. But you are planning on opening up your own pie shop,
At
right?
some point, I would love that. Right now, I'm baking out of a communal kitchen. I'm
You're
selling
at Union
at the,
Kitchen, right?
I'm at Union Kitchen, and I'm at the Columbia Heights Farmer's Market every week mm-hmm.
and
selling
now, are
my
you
wares.
Making little pies?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. All
yeah.
right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up with you
Great.
Just so people
and
can
gonna
find you.
I'm going to rip up your pie here.
Okay. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Do you want to do more to help people in our community? United Way of the National Capital Area is gearing up for Do More 24, a one-day online fundraiser. On June 19th, you'll have 24 hours, starting at midnight, to give where you live and donate to the causes you care about. So on June 19th, go to domore24.org and donate to the nonprofits that serve the region. Get more info at domore24.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
How pretty
too. All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Tini Lamoth, friend of Sam Nellis and soon to be Alyssa Nellis from Ithaca College, but she
or
is the pie
Alyssa
queen.
Alyssa Turner Nellis, or maybe just Alyssa Turner.
No, Alyssa Nellis.
Okay.
That's how it's going to be.
At least she'll still be Alyssa.
I have spoken. I guess, first of all, let's make sure everybody knows where to get this book because it's really an extraordinary piece of work.
Oh, absolutely. It's available at all Barnes & Nobles. You can also find it on Amazon. And then locally, it's at Politics and Prose.
Are you doing any signings or anything like that?
I am going to New York next month for a signing at New York City Center.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That's big.
Yeah, it's been very
fun.
Oh,
boy.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming
thank
in today.
You so much
congratulations.
For having me.
Thank
so
you
much
for the
fun.
Delicious pie.
You're
with
welcome.
The no fail pie crust.
I'm going to have you switch with Tom.
Yep.
And.
Well, here come the Rammies.
Okay, here come the Rammies.
Again. So.
Introduce who's in the studio.
Well, we've got, you know, come on. We've got Santosh and we've got Tom. I already introduced him, but I guess the first thing, before we talk about the Rammies or your restaurants or anything, both Nikki and I are very friendly with the people at L'Académie de Cuisine. And, you know, there's a lot of focus on the sort of the culinary side of that school. And yet they also turn out some amazing pastry chefs and bakers. And the more and more that I sort of learn about the life of a pastry chef, it's like being consigned to hard labor for your whole life, isn't it? I mean, talk about that a little. What it's like, you guys get to work at, God knows what, 4-5 o'clock in the morning ish.
Not that bad.
Maybe not.
Not anymore, right?
I mean, bakers.
You're a baker. Yeah.
Bakers do. I know they get there early and all that, but I mean, you work incredible hours.
I mean,
and
you're the last one to leave. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you're. What's your typical day like?
I would say 12 to 14 hours.
Oof.
Yeah.
Both of you. Well, but both of you have very different pastry programs. I mean, Tom, what are you overseeing at this point? Are you seeing overseeing all three restaurants?
Yeah. Fiola, Fiola Mar, and Casa Luca.
Casa Luca. So have you developed the dessert programs for all three?
Mm-hmm.
And then where are you, like, are you just, you clearly can't execute all of them, so how are you doing that?
I kind of travel around to each one, wherever I'm needed the most, basically. So lately, I'm spending a lot of time at Fiola Mare because it's new.
Right.
And we're very busy, thankfully.
Just a little busy.
And then I'll spend, you know, a couple of days at Fiola, a couple of days at Casa Luca, a couple of days at Fiola Mare. It's pretty much how it is.
Mm-hmm. And Santosh, I mean, Coco Sala is a rock and roll place. That place vibrates.
Thank you.
From the minute they open the front door. So I guess my question for you is, you're back there, you're creating stuff. How often do you have to essentially inject something new into the pastry menu to keep things hopping?
We've been open since 6 years now, and it's becoming more and more challenging to take out something which is on the menu.
You mean because people get sort of fall in love
exactly,
with it?
Exactly. Yeah. So, hey, where is my dessert? You know. Mm-hmm. So I try to keep it kind of innovative and try to introduce one at a time. So normally, in the summertime, I introduce some fresh summer dessert, fruit-related. I mean, obviously, I need to use chocolate in everything, so that's the
thing. Yeah.
There's a focus, so that's one of the main thing going on.
Well, nobody's going to complain about that.
Well, actually, why don't you, since we're talking chocolate.
And we're looking at some beautiful desserts.
Why don't you tell us what you brought today?
Okay, I got two of our signature desserts here. One is the chocolate onyx. Again, I think we will shut down if we don't have chocolate onyx. That's how it is today. I'm using a 64% dark chocolate from Madagascar. It's called Manjari from Valrhona. And this is very interesting. We have a layer of chocolate brownie, very thin layer of chocolate brownie in the bottom. We have a vanilla bean creme brulee in the center. And the salted caramel on top.
Super easy. This does not sound like a lot of work at all.
We have a surprise for you. We brought in a world-renowned chocolate expert. Excuse me, Tessa Nellis. Tessa, how is that?
Good.
Good, question mark. Good.
So I got a question for you guys. In baseball.
Wait. Can Tom tell us what you brought, please, before it melts all over the place? It's so
Tom's
delicious.
This is something we have on the menu right now. It's a strawberry tart.
Mm-hmm.
It's got tomato jam.
I was going to say, it's savory.
Yeah. It's got thyme blossoms, strawberry sorbet. It's a piece of cake soaked in limoncello. That's about it.
It's really refreshing. It's nice.
It's so light and terrific. Well, since you both are doing such different things in your kitchen, you know, how do you feel like something like the Rammies applies to what you're doing? You know, how do you, I mean, congratulations, of course, on both being nominated, but what does it mean to each of you?
I mean, everyone deserves recognition. And we have been open since 6 years, and I always look forward to the Rammies. And we have two awards already from Rammies, and this is a great thing for me, and this is an honor to be nominated. Mm-hmm. And we also like to, get the recognition for all the creative things we do at Coco Sala.
Mm-hmm.
And also we get hundreds of people every day come and go, and all the feedback we get, the smile on their faces, that makes me really feel happy to be nominated.
Yeah, it's a good benchmark to like figure out where you are, if your food's still good, relevant, things mm-hmm. like that. It's my fourth nomination.
Wow.
So
are you looking to be the new Susan Lucci?
That's what my wife calls me.
Well, you're kind of hot.
Tom. You're a little taller than she is.
My wife calls me a Susan Lucci okay. pastry.
But let me ask this question, because like in baseball, the MVP is the one that puts up, the best numbers and has the best season. And that's on a level playing field, literally and figuratively, because they're all doing the same thing with different dessert menus and different restaurant profiles. How fair is it to judge you guys and put you up against, the three other nominees who have different styles, and it's different strokes for different folks. So how can they judge?
It's all pretty subjective, I think. Just being nominated is nice because really, there's a lot of games involved and different politics involved and things like that. So just winning, being nominated is nice. Winning is nice, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just shows that everybody who's nominated is just doing a really good job at what they do, and that they should all be proud of the work they do on a daily basis.
Certainly, absolutely.
Well, and so let me just ask you, Tom, since you are doing three restaurants right now, how do you, as a pastry chef, make each of those unique? I mean, Santosh talked about how you, with a six-year-old restaurant, what you have to do to keep it, you have to change a little bit, but you can't change it too much because people have their favorites. But with the different concepts, how do you make desserts that fit each?
Well, each concept is different, which mm-hmm. makes it a little easier. So, Fiola is a little more like refined country Italian, mm-hmm. And then Fiola Mare, of course, is seafood. Mm-hmm. So like Fiola Mare, when we went into opening it, we just decided to focus on coastal regions of Italy and Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to hit certain notes that each area had. Like I would research restaurants there. Every restaurant had a lemon tart. Every restaurant had babas, stuff like that.
Is it challenging to make those while including seafood in the dessert, Tom? Oh, that's not the idea?
He's such a jerk.
I've made crab ice cream before.
He gave me that look. What an idea.
Watch it. And then, Casa Luca is a trattoria, so it's things that are just really comforting. So each one has its own challenges, but also having three different places makes it so you kind of... You get to step back a little bit from the other places and see things new.
Gosh, it is.
Well, we want to thank you both for coming in this morning and bringing in these wonderful desserts. And congratulations for being nominated. No matter how many times you're nominated, it is, I think, important to know that people respect and appreciate your work and that you're being applauded for it. So congratulations to both of you. And we'll see you in 2 weeks at the Rams.
Thank you for having us.
Cheers.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers. Exactly. You.
All right, so let's go back to Nikolai for a second there. What do you do? You're making a lot of noise.
He's
with
over
that
there.
Ice.
Yes, you are.
I mean, it better be good. That's all I can say.
Part of the gig. this is one of my own creations, actually. I wanted to come up with something original and something kind of contemporary. So I sort of updated the classic cobbler, which is classically combines a spirit with some sherry, muddled fruit. My version I call a Creole cobbler. I use... Guadalupan rum, or rum from Guadalupe called Rum d'Amoiseau. Again, it's an agricole, not in the AOC Martinique, of course, mm-hmm. it's a separate island, but it is part of France as well in the Caribbean. And d'Amoiseau is the brand leader for rum agricole in Guadalupe. I'm using their 40% 80 proof white rum. And so it's that with a little sherry, a little.
It's the end of International Sherry Week.
That's right, yeah. So in honor, that kind of fits in with that. And then
I miss the whole thing.
I'm going to layer some some cherry herring on the top as the garnish that sort of represents the muddled fruit, because I'm not actually going to muddle anything.
Okay.
But Nikki's done fine with that today.
So. Here we go.
All right.
All right, good. Well, while you're doing that,
So let's talk about Trummers on Main. Diana Roderick is the relatively new SOM. You've been there a year, year and a half. And Trummers is out in Clifton, Virginia, so it's not exactly on everybody's main street, and yet it draws an incredible crowd. And even when it was open, I mean, what did I have here? That you guys were picked by Bon Appetit as one of the best new restaurants. This is back in 2009, but even then, it was, you know, hitting on all eight.
We just got nominated also for a Rammy for Best Fine Dining Restaurant as well, so it's great to, you know, kind of put that... have that to be able to put us on the map as well, to reach out to a lot of people that maybe don't know where we are or what we're doing. But we've got some really fun events coming up for Father's Day. We've got a bourbon tasting.
Are you taking notes?
I just brought out these awesome roasted bone marrow.
This will go good with the pie and the chocolate. Right?
So like I've got some totally.
I'm gonna have a heart attack right here on the show.
This is definitely vegan before five.
God,
right?
Look at this.
Before you dig in, we're supposed to loosh it, right?
Well, you have to eat the bone marrow first.
Really?
So that's why I have bread here with some peach jam that our chef Austin Fawcett has made. Mm-hmm. And so you eat the bone marrow on the bread and enjoy it. And then once you've eaten everything, what we do, we use bullet bourbon at Trummers on Main.
Okay.
And so you hold the marrow up to your mouth and then I or someone else will pour the bourbon down the bone. So that's why there's a napkin here.
So you can enjoy.
So it's really quite fun. So we've got rum.
The luge is not the marrow. It's the bourbon that goes afterwards.
Exactly. I'm featuring this bourbon tasting where there's going to be four different bourbons.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
Pritchard's
God,
double chocolate bourbon. We've got Belle Mead bourbon. We're using Bullet for the luge. And so we're featuring these four bourbons, and at the end, you know, there's going to be a bone marrow luge for all of the guests.
This is crazy. My cardiologist is out in the hall with a crash cart.
I mean, this is better than foie gras. I mean, we use a barbecue dry rub on this before we roast it. So really, your lips are kind of burning from the spice.
Yeah.
And so you're ready for that bourbon.
Right.
I mean, it really goes down easy because it's kind of, you know, the bone is kind of warm. So it's really just delicious. Such a delicacy.
And yet something that you didn't really see on menus like 10 or 15 years ago, but now I feel like it's had a resurgence. People are really...
Well, they're using the whole animal.
They're not, but people aren't afraid of it.
Exactly.
Great.
Oh, it's a commercial. We're going to take a quick break.
Right.
When we come back,
No.
We're going to see you use the actual luge on somebody in studio. And we're going to find out about some of the other fun things going on Trummers on Main. This is Nikki and David Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat. I'm stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Well, this is David, Nikki Nellis on Foodie and the Beast. And we're back, and I'm about to become an experiment for Nikki. I've got a bone marrow, bone that I just ate the marrow out of, and I'm about to experience the
luge
bourbon
effect.
Luge effect into my, oh my God.
Okay, so David is putting up a bone, and she, people are taking pictures. Okay, there we go. David has luge. Bullet bourbon. Sorry, wow. We also have rum in studio.
That's great.
And how was it? Was it tasty? Anybody else?
It was delicious.
Tom, you want to give it a shot?
Tom's
like, yes.
Somebody
okay.
Me in the chest.
Here we go. So we're doing luges in studio at Foodie and the Beast. This is what it has come to here. People are bringing up the bones, and Diana is pouring the bourbon.
Isn't that good? Woof. All right. Now I'm going to chase it with some pie.
Okay, we're going to have a little pie. We're going to have a little rum flat. We're in good shape. So tell us now, so when are you doing this? This is a specific event.
The bone luge is always on our menu.
Okay.
And here's the cool thing is that we actually have on our menu to do a bone luge with Chef Austin Fawcett. So you can actually order it and Chef will come down and he'll actually do a bone luge with you. I don't know how cool of an experience, you know, where else you can get that.
That's pretty fun.
We're also using it for the bourbon tasting on June 12th at 6 o'clock. It's a Thursday, Father's Day. Bring your cigars. Bring your own cigars on the patio.
Great.
Four bourbons and a bone luge.
Well, now let's also talk about, you have a pop-up.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
We are actually open Tuesdays through Thursdays. Mm-hmm. We have a top floor, a gallery room, where we display some art gallery, local artists. Mm-hmm. And so we actually have a pop-up restaurant Tuesday through Thursday from 5:30 to 9, and it's a seafood shack. So it's really cool. We've got a lot of fresh seafood dishes and fish tacos on the menu. We've got a Thursday clam bake where you can actually order a big pot of seafood and share it with the table.
It's a hootenanny out there in Clifton.
You know, it's so much fun. There's so much to do.
Nothing says how old you are like a term like hootenanny.
Look at me. Do I look like I'm 88? No.
No.
I don't think so.
Well, for those who haven't been out to Trummers on Main, since we're talking about all the things you do there, can you give us a better idea of the restaurant? Because you are nominated for fine dining, so you've got... Can you tell us about the feel there and what it's like and the kind of food that the chef is doing?
Absolutely. We are a creative American cuisine fine dining restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You can come in, enjoy our beautiful atrium room, and have dinner. Really, it's beautiful architecture. It's in a building that used to be the Hermitage. So anybody, you know, that's over 7 years ago, but anybody in the area would maybe know that restaurant. But we've made it our own. Stefan and Victoria Trummer are the owners. Stefan's a mixologist. We have an amazing cocktails.
Well, apparently Nikolai knows him. Right, Nikolai?
I know Stefan from New York.
Right.
Back
yeah.
He had a place called 202, I think, in Meatpacking.
So it's really, it's a place to go. It's a destination place. You know, if you want to get away, there's rolling hills on the way, you know, to get there. I think we do a lot of events there. It's a place to have weddings because we have four different dining rooms. We have a private wine room that has on the display of our 8,000 bottle cellar. We've got some heavy hitter DRCs on display. So you can have a private dinner there. And we have also a smaller loft dining room with fireplaces, very cozy. So lots of windows or a cozy dining room. And then we have our gallery room, which we use often. And we're also using for this pop-up. So
very cool. And why the pop-up? Why are you doing that?
You know, we wanted to do something fun and something different. And, you know, really, you know, that's what people are doing is they're doing these pop-up restaurants all over. It's only for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. It's really only for... you know, through the end of the summer. So you can come in and just enjoy it for right now, a snapshot of what else we can do.
And since you are the sommelier, can you tell us a little bit about your wine program?
Absolutely. We have right now probably close to 4,000 bottles in our cellar, pretty diverse from all over the world. We have a lot of Austrian reds and whites. Stefan Trummer's from Austria, so we'd love to support that and really feature some amazing wines that maybe you might not find anywhere else. But it's certainly
that's got to be the best
expensive.
Part of your job, right?
Absolutely.
Sourcing those?
Absolutely. You know, it's...
Yeah, Diana, let's go to Austria for a couple of days.
You know, it's really fun to be able to, you know... I like to have an approach with guests that is, you know, very personable, and I want people to, you know, be able to ask me anything about the wines and, you know, find that best bottle, find that bottle that they're looking for that they didn't even know. So it's definitely a treat.
Well.
So what's this? This is a lot of fun. It was really cool.
If you can find Clifton, which shouldn't be hard, out 66.
That's
66
not nice.
To the park. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Do you know where Clifton, Virginia is?
I haven't a clue.
Clifton is close in, but
it's 27 miles or 25 miles west of, you know, just take 66 all the way
down. It's a little gem of a town.
Definitely.
Off of 7100, right? Can you get there that way?
You can get there that way and then get onto Clifton Road and enjoy the country kind of feel.
It's beautiful.
Very cool. Well, thank you for bringing in everything today.
Absolutely.
And
thank you.
Everybody should go check out the pop-up.
Yes.
And everybody should try a marrowbone luge.
Yeah,
don't you think? I think that goes
crazy. That could be one of the craziest things we've ever had here. It's delicious.
It's very
yum.
Cool. Thank you.
All right, Nikolai, back to you for a second. This cobbler's delicious. This is.
Oh, thank you. And I also just served up the Creole sidecar as well.
Oh.
Where'd that go?
Oh, right. That's this? So what is a Creole sidecar?
So a sidecar classically is just lemon juice, orange liqueur, and brandy. So I updated that to reflect our Creole heritage from the French Caribbean. So I use, of course, an agricole rum. And I'm using Select Barrel from Rome Clément. It's aged for 3 years in French oak barrels.
Okay.
Things happen much more quickly in Martinique because of the tropical climate.
Mm-hmm.
So you're losing a lot more evaporation out of the barrel each year. You lose about 4% out of a barrel in, say, Kentucky, for example, every year.
Okay.
In Martinique, you lose anywhere from 8 to 10 or 12% even.
Wow.
So that's a lot of money going out into the air, but it's also accelerating the rate of maturity that you're getting out of the spirit. So you get 3 years in a barrel in Martinique is maybe 8 to 10 years in Kentucky.
Fascinating.
So you're getting a lot of flavor. And so I make a sidecar, which again, just lemon juice. Our orange liqueur from Clément is called Creole Shrub.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very old family recipe for an orange liqueur. And then, of course, some lemon juice.
All right, last question. We got about a minute. You say that, you said in your materials that Rum Clément is not for frat parties. It's a grown-up spirit for the serious imbiber. Does that include frats at Harvard where they can afford it?
As long as they're using their parents' credit card.
Right, exactly.
Buy all the Rum.
Is there any other way to go?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Last but not least here, I'm handing out a neat taste. No shaking, no ice. This is Cuvée Omer Clément.
Oh, my God.
It smells delicious.
It's named for the founder and who, of course, started the distillery in 1887. This is what the master distiller considers to be his three best vintages.
Nikki fell over.
In the last 15.
But the smell is delicious. I'm good. I'm good. I'm off the floor. No, the smell is delicious, though.
So you're getting a three unique vintages, 2006, 2001, and 97.
Mm-hmm.
They pump them out of the aging barrels and blend them in a large vat until it is where.
So what's the alcohol content of this?
This is 44%. So we're talking.
So you should never smoke and exhale near this.
Actually, this is an amazing rum to pair with cigars.
Yeah, it's almost like a. Like a bourbon. I mean, it's...
Or a brandy.
Yeah,
brandy is what it tastes like.
This shows you sort of the...
it's so smoky.
The realization of Omer's dream to create a fine, aged Caribbean spirit.
Okay.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we got to end this food fest, food and rum fest. Everything that you heard on the show today and lots more is on the list, areyouonit.com.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki's website, where there are about, 35, 40,000 subscribers, 50, 100 million subscribers. If you want to know what's going on across the D.C. area, food, wine, spirits, restaurants, chefs, that's the place to go. You can listen to her on WTOP every Sunday at 12:50 and every Thursday at 12:50?
11:50?
12:51. 12:50. And follow her on Twitter. And
that
on
Nikki
Facebook.
Knows. There you go.
And that's all I got
really,
to say.
More on Instagram than Facebook.
Okay.
Anyway, we want to thank everybody for coming in today.
I'm so 20th century. Sorry.
This has been a terrific show. Next week, though, is no slouch either. We've got the guys from 1905. They're opening up a new restaurant called El Camino. And David Hagedorn is back in studio. He wrote a cookbook with Cathal Armstrong. The two of them are coming in. They're going to talk about it. And Puerto Rican celebrity chef Willo Bennett is going to be in studio. He's got a book, and he's going to be cooking here in